From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Mr. Lobo joins us. We're going to talk about some sci-fi movies. Time to have a little fun. Here's what's happening. North Korea's deputy UN ambassador said tensions on the peninsula had escalated to the point that a nuclear war may break out at any moment. On the surface, the latest U.S. military movements may look like preparations for some kind of preemptive strike on North Korea's infrastructure, but it's clear the two forces are still locked in a stalemate. Dr. Jerome Corsi, Infowars.com with us. Jerry, what's the latest that you're hearing about this?
Well, George, we right now have the USS Ronald Reagan in exercises off of North Korea with the South Korean Navy. We diverted a second major U.S. Navy carrier strike group, the USS Nimitz, which was originally going to go to the Persian Gulf. It's now deployed along with the Ronald Reagan off Korea. And a third U.S. carrier task force, Theodore Roosevelt, left San Diego. It's going to be deployed in the Western Pacific and the Persian Gulf. It's, of course, available to join the other two carriers. I mean, I don't know about you, George, but if I had two U.S. Nimitz-class carrier task forces off my doorstep, I think I'd think twice about it.
Well, I do, too. And I again, Jerry, let me ask you this. What do you think Vladimir Putin of Russia would do if Kim Jong-un would say about Russia, we want to construct a nuclear warhead on a ballistic missile to hit the far coast or the end of Russia? What do you think he'd do?
Well, I think it's very clear. I mean, every country, including the United States, we've got to protect our national security interests. And if the last thing we want is North Korea to develop a nuclear weapon that could launch on Hawaii or Alaska or the West Coast, I mean, let alone Japan and South Korea, which are both allies, we've got to take it seriously. And President Trump, I think, who's going to be visiting the region in November, I believe, is going to try everything he can to find a diplomatic solution. But, George, I just don't see how North Korea says, oh, I think we've got it now, we'll just renounce our nukes and you win. I don't think there is an end game here except for a military solution. I've said from the beginning that it's going to be very dangerous. It could lead to a regional or even a nuclear war regionally. I think China will stand down. I think Russia will stand down. But North Korea could easily kill thousands in South Korea, even with an artillery attack on Seoul.
They've got too much conventional weaponry.
Yes, that's right, George. And they could also launch conventional missile attacks on Japan. I mean, I'm sure that President Trump has been advised by the military that we can apply massive power and force to North Korea with B-1 bomber attacks, with carrier strike forces, cruise missiles. Every one of these carrier task forces has cruise missile destroyers and cruisers, two nuclear submarines included with each nuclear carrier task force. This is massive firepower, and I don't think that the president wants to deploy it unless there is no other solution. And that's, I think, the problem is I'm not sure there is another solution.
I don't think there is either, Jerry. Thank you. Jerry Corsi. After months of often heated debate, a civilian oversight panel tonight signed off on a year-long test of drones by the Los Angeles Police Department, which will become the largest police department in the nation to deploy the controversial technology. They say it will not be weaponized. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com with us. It won't be weaponized right now, John, but what about the future?
Well, they always worry about mission creep. You know, that's what they say. You know, you deploy this here and, you know, you have these restrictions on it. And then, you know, somebody on the force becomes very ambitious and then starts, you know, putting, you know, a drone over the Playboy Mansion or something and peering into bedrooms or something and, you know, checking out, you know, other things that are going on. I think, you know, that the police chief, Charlie Beck, has said with great emphasis, he's emphatically said that it will not be used for inappropriate surveillance, that it will be used as part of a SWAT effort in the, you know, case that the LAPD needs a different set of eyes in order to handle an emergency situation. Right. So I think that there's a lot of objection to it because I think, you know, it becomes obviously the eye in the sky. You know, having a drone basically observing various communities makes people very nervous. But I think if they really look at the intent, at least as it's expressed by, you know, the police chief, it's purely to be used in the case of emergent, exigent situations. And so I think, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea, just using the best technology available. They should be using them in Korea right now.
Well, it's great technology if it's not abused.
Well, that's just that's the problem. It's that you never know when you, you know, add these additional tools to any, you know, police agency. There's a, you know, it's one thing to have a police agency. It's another thing to have a police state. And I think there are a lot of folks that are very concerned that, you know, our policing in the United States, I mean, you know, not just various racial or ethnic groups, but there's a lot of folks that believe that the, you know, policing authority in the United States is too militaristic. It's become more fascist, and it suppresses, you know, not only free speech, but also just any opportunity for anybody to assemble and to express themselves. And then, you know, these the crackdowns that have taken place for various kinds of groups over the last, you know, several years have been pretty well noted by people. That you get out there and you protest and you make, you know, you create a scene in any part of the city, they'll sweep you out. The, you know, the Occupy movement, I don't know if you remember what happened there in downtown Los Angeles. I knew people that were there protesting legitimately, and they were literally swept off the street and, you know, attacked by the LAPD and incarcerated. They were released, and they apologized for what they did. But I think, you know, it's a balancing act, and when you start adding a technique like a drone, you know, you wonder just how far are they willing to go with this.
What's the latest column on the onlinecolumnist.com?
Well, the latest column is, you know, is on North Korea basically saying today that any ally of the United States that is any way connected with the United States will be hit with a nuclear attack. And that is, you know, and they're
isn't that crazy?
Responding to that in Great Britain because, you know, the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has been very critical of Kim Jong-un and asking him to stand down in this this confrontation.
He's getting worse.
There are people concerned right now, legitimately concerned, that this could escalate to a nuclear exchange and by Trump. That if this thing goes where we see in any kind of a conventional military altercation with North Korea, that it is not stopping them from you know, launching conventional war, artillery strikes and missile strikes on South Korea or Japan. There is a growing possibility that the, you know, the Pentagon is using a nuke as a possibility in Pyongyang.
Well, it may be. John, thank you so much. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. A father in New Orleans apparently killed his own daughter because God told him to do it. He's 45 years old, arrested after he admitted to suffocating and fatally stabbing his 18-month-old daughter. In Pensacola, Florida, a 325-pound woman is charged with killing her 9-year-old cousin by sitting on the child as punishment. My gosh. A team of archaeologists have uncovered early evidence of ritual violence in Peru's northern highlands, providing new clues to what lay behind the development of bloody ceremonial mutilation in ancient civilizations. Seven of the people that they found the bodies of showed signs of trauma, but they believed that they were what they call lower class people, that the elitists weren't sacrificed. Stress may contribute to poor health just as much as a poor diet, according to a new study. And the legendary Bigfoot and other creatures like it have reportedly been spotted near a Northern California lake. According to a paranormal investigator, he heard about the sightings from a local farmer who said he saw the creature and five others running on his ranch near Avocado Lake. Up next, what's behind the numbers? A guide to exposing financial chicanery and avoiding huge losses in your portfolio, and much more next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Brad Lemonsdorf is our special guest for the next couple hours, a very seasoned money manager and market strategist His monthly Lymondorf's Market Timing Report newsletter reaches 100,000 investors who are interested in his opinion about future market direction to help them make decisions on how they can make more money. Brad also manages a couple investment vehicles. One is called the Exchange Traded Funds, known as ETFs. He's going to tell us about that. They're like mutual funds, but a little different. And they allow large and small investors to take advantage of his stock selections. Brad, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this.
Thank you very much for having me.
And your book, of course, is called What's Behind the Numbers.
Well, my partner's book, but yes, that's been a big book for McGraw-Hill.
Super. Now, everybody's talking about the market and when it's going to correct, and it keeps going up. What do you say?
When you're analyzing the market, it's interesting because what you're talking about are the indexes. So the indexes continue to hit 52-week highs, and they're publicizing that. But if you look at the average stock in the marketplace, the average stock really isn't participating as strongly as the indexes would indicate.
Is that a concern?
Of course it is. The amount of stocks that are participating in a rally, for instance, what we've had from the lows in August to just recently, a push of 5 or 10% up should produce several hundred 52-week highs during that push. And we're really literally only having a few dozen a day, which is pretty alarming to see such a thin lineup participating.
What about the person, Brad, who is not in the stock market at all, listening to the show right now with you and me and saying, I'm not in the market. What do I care? What do we tell them?
I would say that the stock market definitely creates a lot of push and pull within our average daily lives. I was actually talking with someone recently. They were telling me a story about the crash of 87 and how they just got married. The home pricing market was way outside of what they could afford. The crash of 87 shook up the country, knocked some prices down to where they could afford it, and they were able to buy the home that they wanted. So you never know, but it definitely moves your life around when lots of monies are moving in and out of the economy.
Brad, if there's any kind of military involvement with North Korea, any kind, whether it's conventional or nuke, what's going to happen to the economy here?
Well, I think everybody will freeze up, and there's no question that would be very, very surprising, horrific. What I'm here to tell people is that what I'm specializing in is when 99% of the people are standing on one side of the room, it's time to walk over to the other. Or said another
yeah.
way, your parents always told you to leave the party early, but who can leave a party early? So when things start making no sense, like they did in 07, like they did in 2000 during the internet bubble, you can bet that you're going to get some mean reversion to what we've seen to the upside.
The great late poet Robert Frost once wrote a poem called "The Road Not Taken," and he took the one less traveled by and claimed that it made all the difference. That's a little bit with what you've just said.
It's really true. During the 08 correction, the average individual account in the United States was at one of the highest cash levels that had been seen in several decades. So when you think about your exposure in your account, you're kind of like talking your book, right? So if you're fully invested, you obviously think stocks are going to go much higher. So unfortunately, in 08, it was so scary that people just started raising cash and selling stocks when they shouldn't have. Now they seem to be so bullish on stocks. This is one of the lowest amount of cash that the average cash on hand has had. So just from a contrarian's point of view, there isn't a lot of room. Like a lot of people have already reacted to the good news. So a little bit of bad news can go a long way at this point just because the glass is so full, in our opinion.
Absolutely. I don't buy stocks, Brad, because I'm, in an industry where there may be a time where you talk about a company, good or bad, about whatever they do. And I never want to be accused of, oh, my God, look what he just did. So I don't even buy stocks. I don't even worry about that. But when the market crashed back around 7 and 8, I was looking at a stock because I like to look at them. and this thing went down to $1.41 a share, and it got up to $80 a share. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, it just shows you. I'll tell you, as a short seller, it's really interesting. So sometimes being a good short seller is losing the least amount of money sometimes. And there were plenty of short funds, competitors of ours and such, that do similar type, you know, investing on the short side, which is, you know, we make money when companies depreciate.
Right. George Soros jumped in big when President Trump got elected, right?
I'm sorry, say that again.
George Soros, I think, jumped in big shorting companies, thinking that the market was going to go way down when Trump went in.
And he easily could. You know, he operates with a lot of sentiment and contrarian orientation as well, so that wouldn't surprise me. I didn't actually see that. But it's interesting that, so anyway, the average person really misallocates his money pretty aggressively. During the 08 and 09 period, we saw a lot of people pulling back when they shouldn't have. They should have been aggressively buying. And at this point in the cycle, we see a lot of people getting very heavily invested when, frankly, they should be taking chips off the table.
Interesting tech. Now, in terms of timetable, what do you think, Brad? What's your best? Yeah, assuming there's no military conflict with North Korea, you know, these are unpredictable things that change. But assuming everything's the status quo, what do you think's going to happen and over what time period?
Well, we were extremely bearish coming into 2016 when we had that 10% correction. You know, we never really know what type of correction we're looking for, although it always is scary at the bottom. That's one thing I think experience trains you to encounter. But look, I look out about 9 to 18 months. That's traditionally what my view is. I don't look out much farther than that, so my opinions definitely can change. But at this point in time, you know, we see a lot of the corporate executives that run the great companies of this country. And traditionally, they do come out and they sell their own stock as part of a program just because they're given a lot of stock to run businesses and stock, big companies, stock options and such. But one of the problems right now is that you're at a seven-year high in insider selling. So while the markets are hitting seven-year highs and the media is making a big deal out of it, corporate executives are selling at one of the highest clip they ever have, and that's also a very, you know, it's a very bad negative sign to see that.
You're heavy into cash right now, too, aren't you?
So in our long fund, the SQZZ fund, we particularly are looking for heavily shorted stocks where we just think the short sellers have got it wrong. And there's been plenty of them. BlackBerry is one of our favorites, and it's having a, you know, a big turnaround. But you are right. The SQZZ ETF has about 62% invested and about 38% cash, and I give myself that flexibility in the fund. Most index ETFs, and I'm sure your viewers may or may not know this, but traditionally that type of vehicle stays fully invested 100% of the time. I was a past hedge fund manager. I definitely have an opinion on how invested I want to be and how lightly invested I want to be. And right now, since I'm expecting some, you know, some downside pressure in the markets, I want to have some cash to be able to buy cheap when things do occur, whenever that may be.
Brad, what do you say is a good annual return? What are you happy with?
Well, I'm happy on the long side. A 10% return is pretty nice. One of the things that is interesting about SQZZ is we're long stocks that the short sellers are actually paying the banks to borrow to short. So just to take you through this real quickly, GNC, which is the
supplement company. Yeah.
They've fallen on hard times, but their branding is fabulous, and they're going really heavy on Amazon, and I think they'll come out the other side nicely. Lots of insider buying, so the corporate executives of the company are buying their own shares in the open market.
Well, that's an interesting trend.
So that's a good sign. That's always good to see. The company is high. So if there is 10 shares outstanding, which there's millions, 4 shares for every 10 shares outstanding is short, which is a very high amount of shorts. It's almost like the short sellers are attacking the price.
Yeah, and if that price goes up, they're in trouble, aren't they? Big time. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. More with Brad Lemonsdorf on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Boy, I bet you're just waiting to hear about our little Cosmic Search trivia question tonight. As you know, 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, the trivia contest. You're eligible to win $500 every week, and you can enter up to 5 times. And if you get the question right, your name is put in the hat for the drawing. Full information, entry information, and rules, visit coasttocoastam.com. However, I'm going to give you the question right now and some of the possibilities. Which one of these is a claim made by the alien contactee Florida politician who was recently in the news? Had that story yesterday. A, there's a cave on the island of Malta which contains 30,000 alien skulls. B, we are descended from a group of aliens called the Blue Avians. C, ETs from the Sirius star system have an undersea base in the Caribbean. D, Mitch McConnell is a hybrid. So you pick the right answer, your name will be in the hat, and then they draw at the end of the week, and somebody wins $500. It's pretty cool. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Brad Lemonsdorf with us. He heads up the Lemonsdorf Market Timing Report newsletter. We'll tell you how you can subscribe to that in a moment. Brad, couple questions as it has to do with people and their ages with investments. If you're 22, you've just graduated from college, let's say, or you're, you know, out of high school and you've been working, what's the smartest thing to do for investing if you're about 22 years old?
Well, you have such a long horizon in your investment life that it pays to buy high growth, high quality growth that you can hold for long periods of time without having to pay a lot of taxes. So just because your playing field is so long, the older you get, as John Bogle would say, who he runs one of the largest money market complexes in the United States. Your age should be your fixed income exposure. So as you move into 60 and 70 years old, you don't play the stock market as aggressively as you do when you're young. So my expectation would be to be investing in every crisis.
Interesting. 30 to 40, a little more aggressive?
You can stay aggressive until you're probably get into your 50s, 55, and then it's probably, you know, you have a little time horizon where you're going to decide where you're going to start pulling the ripcord to retire, and you got to start making some, you know, because it's an investment. It's not like owning something. It can fluctuate wildly with inside of a cycle.
Now, the funds that you manage, an investor or somebody wants to participate, they don't have to do much work. You do it all, right?
That's right. So we're an actively managed fund. The SQZZ ETF, which is the long fund, which is where you buy stocks and hope they go up, that's traded on the NASDAQ exchange. And the other fund, which is used for hedging, if you're very bearish and concerned about the stock market going down and you want some protection, that's the HDGE ETF, and that trades on the New York Stock Exchange. So it's very fluid, pricing every 15 seconds, on both very liquid exchanges.
Are you seeing people shift, Brad, to the more conservative, they don't know if the market's going to continue type of feeling?
I've never seen probably since the late 90s, where people have moved in droves so aggressively into passive-oriented index funds. One of the reasons, obviously, for that is the lower fee that you're charged. But at a certain level, you know, prices don't, you know, they don't go to the moon, and prices have accelerated quite a bit over the last several years. So my suggestion for people is index funds aren't bad, but they have been driven up quite a bit over the last few years. It may be, you know, good to be patient and let the indexes come back to you. There's a lot of individual stocks in the marketplace that aren't in the indexes that I try to take advantage of as well. including a stock like I mentioned earlier, BlackBerry, which is one of my favorite stocks.
Why do you like BlackBerry? I mean, isn't that phone passe?
So they're really, they're a security software company now. So they've completely changed their stripe.
Ah, they revamped themselves.
Completely restructured with a brand new CEO who's a world-class software CEO. The company is $5 billion total market capitalization, and they've got almost $2 billion in cash with no debt. So they're in great shape, but 10% of the company's shares are still short from the bad taste that everyone has left in their mouth. Oh, they, you know, they lost, Apple won, but BlackBerry still has some fabulous assets in the security area that they're now taking advantage of. So I think the short sellers are in for a rough ride over the next couple of years in the stock.
In terms of predicting, what do you predict for the rest of this year? Short term, only a few months.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you can get through the third quarter without any kind of trouble, I think that a lot of people, a lot of big funds will start what's called window dressing, putting the last bits of money they have to work to get it on their balance sheet so that when they report their nice little reports to the board of directors at the end of every year, everything's invested the way it's supposed to be. But as I mentioned, that's more regulatory kind of paperwork, if you will, dotting I's. I do think that things, you know, are very overbought, but I could see them being stable into year end.
Now, do you factor in the potential of war?
No. I factor in the potential that everyone's expectations is so perfect right now, meaning everyone is not expecting anything bad to happen. It's completely, nothing bad is priced into the market. So anything that were to come along, like a war that's unexpected, would certainly, you know, catch people off guard.
See, I think we're going to have some armed conflict here. I mean, it's just everything I've heard, every guest I've talked to, everything I hear, I think something big is going to happen. So how can investors not listen to that?
Oh, I think they would be crazy not to be listening to that. And I frankly feel like you're correct. I think that you're not dealing with someone who's rational. You're dealing with someone who wants to do what he wants to do. And until there's some real consequences, I think that you're gonna really have to put up some kind of real hit with him.
I mean, even Iran, that is working on its nuke program, isn't as aggressive as this guy in North Korea is. I mean, I don't hear the Iranians saying, we're going to launch on your East Coast and we're making ballistic missiles to do this. This guy's, he's playing with fire.
Well, and like I said, when you deal with someone that you know is going to be realistic on the other side, dealing with them becomes, you know, within an ecosystem that you understand. When you're dealing with something like this, you really can't, talk him down, if you will. Like, it's going to take some kind of very serious confrontation.
I mean, he had his uncle killed, and then he I'm convinced he had his half-brother killed in that airport in Malaysia. But he had his uncle killed because he found out, according to what I've learned, that his uncle was in China trying to drum up support to get the half-brother to lead North Korea, and that they were going to either oust or kill off Kim Jong-un. And he heard about that. So there was some leak in China who said, hey, your uncle's here, and he's trying to drum up support to get you out. He heard about that and had him killed when the guy came back. Now, here's a question. Is that justified? If you're a leader of a country and you find out that there's going to be a coup to get you, don't you fight back?
Well, yeah, you would think you would, of course.
So, you know, what a lot of people thought was a lunatic, maybe he was just defending himself.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I do think firing missiles over Japan, I mean, you know,
that's crazy.
He could just in air accidentally hit a city and say, oh, well, you know, I really didn't mean to do that. Yeah. I really meant just to scare everybody.
Sorry, I killed off 100,000 people. Didn't mean it.
So you know, that's probably more of my concern. I don't necessarily think he's probably trying to hit a city, but he easily could miss and create an accident, which could create some kind of trigger where it locks up a lot of different, you know, trade and things like that in the region.
Brad, as a money manager, if for some reason, because it's almost morning in Korea right now, probably already is, if he launched somewhere, what would you do tomorrow morning when you wake up after this program as a money manager? The markets will probably start plummeting. What do you do?
Well, considering the way I'm positioned, I would be I wouldn't be really ready to do anything. I would want to see a series of days where I would see the expectation ring out in the marketplace. But when I did see that action play out, of course I would want to be covering some of the stocks that we've shorted and take some profits and be bringing in some of those profits. And in the long fund, we have a lot of room in the portfolio to be able to be adding and taking advantage of stuff. I mean, the fact that we go to war, I don't think is going to slow down cybersecurity for BlackBerry. So if I could buy a little more BlackBerry when the stock is hit, just because the markets are down, I can take advantage of that. So there's a lot of places, channels, just to be watching when the markets are volatile to take advantage of it.
During the tragedy in Las Vegas, did the hotels and casinos take a hit the next day?
They did take somewhat of a hit. Some of them did. I've been in and out of the stock, Caesars, actually, and that stock had gotten hit along with some of the other ones. But I think that they'll come back around. Obviously, it was one crazy person.
I think so, too.
Yeah. So
conspiracy theories are everywhere. They're looking for the security guard that got wounded right away. The Las Vegas police basically say he's not missing. He's just doesn't want anything to do with anybody right now.
But gaming's been in a very rough period, and it's coming out of that period now with the economy staying, you know, a little more you know, strong and stable. So, you know, Vegas is up.
Tell us about the newsletter.
So the newsletter, it's free. The website is lmtr.com.
lmtr.com, okay.
Lamonsdorf Market Timing Report. And one of the things that I have noticed, even in the short fund and just through my career, is that people misallocate their asset mix always at the wrong time, and they always are like, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. What I'm trying to do is give you a fresh look at a way where you can judge the market in a contrarian style. A lot of the things that we put into the newsletter cannot be found anywhere on the internet, just because some of the service providers that I'm very good friends with allow me to use some of their visuals. So take full advantage of it. Some of these services are $30,000, $40,000 a year to get, and I'm able to get some of the charts into the newsletter. I put it out monthly. Right now, obviously, it's very bearish, but when it gets bullish, I certainly will be there showing you some bullish statistics that will change your mind when everyone's terrified and holding hands and singing.
When did you get involved in all of this, and how? What got you into the financial world?
I was from Fort Worth, Texas, and grew up around a plethora of money managers, many of which that work for the Bass Brothers, and just grew up around that whole network of guys that were doing pretty extraordinary things.
Weren't they the Silver guys?
So that was the Hunt Brothers.
Okay.
So
they were from Texas too, right?
That's right. They were from Dallas, oil guys as well. This family ran $200 million into about $60 billion in the last 40 years. They're some of the richest investors in the United States. They had hired an investment manager during the 80s, or more of a partner, that came on board. His name was Richard Rainwater, and he was a, he's not with us anymore, but he was a very, very special investor who probably made more families, you know, put him into the famous league than any other family, any other person that in our generation. I mean, the Frist family with HCA, that was all Richard. So anyway, so these were all deal guys, and I got very interested, and they were very, very kind to me at a very young age, and I had full access to what they were thinking, why they were doing this and that, and then I went to go work for one of the managers for about 5 years after college. So they
you were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, well, they had their hands in a lot of different things.
They took you under their wing?
Yeah, so it was, you know, they trade everything from futures to equities, taking, you know, very large positions. So it gives you a really, it was a nice place to cut, you know, cut a rug or whatever you would like to say, and do a lot of different styles of investing to see, you know, where you, you know, really could take advantage of the market.
What do you think of Facebook? Why are investors so excited about Facebook?
Well, I think that they're very excited about the user base that the company has and the ability to be able to distribute different type of products through that type of distribution channel. It's pretty powerful.
It really is. It's
yeah.
Strong. Do you see the internet types companies like the Amazons getting stronger and stronger?
I do, and we have for quite some time. You know, we actually we've been dying to short the mall REITs under the thesis that they've been getting a lot of pain from this phenomenon, and we actually pulled the trigger. They were trading very poorly after the Trump rally. You had mentioned George Soros shorting some stuff. Since we're always short, we're always looking for companies that we think will be weak in the months ahead. The mall REITs certainly started breaking down around the time when Trump started getting elected, and they've been really a nice hit for us in the fund. But it really does show you that real estate prices are definitely starting to get affected by this phenomenon. So there's twice as much retail real estate per person in the United States than in any other G7 country in the world.
You sound like you have fun doing what you do.
Oh, I really enjoy it. I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Are you like Gordon Gekko?
I wouldn't call myself Gordon Gekko, but we work hard every day, and we like to analyze stocks.
Brad, we're going to take calls next hour with interested folks who would love to get some advice from you. You love a few other little companies out there. You like Nike, don't you?
No. We're actually short Nike.
You're selling Nike short. Okay.
That's right. We're very concerned about Nike. That's right.
And Harley-Davidson?
And we don't like Harley either.
How come?
Well, because the demographics are moving very aggressively against them. And they also are using their balance sheet in a very aggressive way that, you know, they're pulling forward a lot of their sales by lending poor credit to people that shouldn't necessarily get it, in our opinion. And so they're making sales that they wouldn't necessarily have gotten. So we think that they're...
It's going to catch up with them.
It's going to catch up with them, and their sales will slow dramatically.
Interesting. Okay, well, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we are going to take phone calls with Brad Lehmansdorf as we talk about What's Behind the Numbers. It's a book his partner wrote, A Guide to Exposing Financial Chicanery and Avoiding Huge Losses in Your Portfolio. I don't know what you do with your money, but check in with Brad when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.